And that is the kicky music that means you are experiencing Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about Fox's new The X Factor. We made, I'm just going to warn you right now, we made Trey and Glenn watch it.
It's, oh man.
I like the assumption that we didn't make Stephen watch it because he would have watched it.
No. Stephen and I would watch it anyway. We're also going to talk a little bit about a new segment that we're calling I Said Good Day, and we'll get into that a little bit later. I have a fabulous quiz that I think you're all going to love, centered around a minor tragedy in my own life. and of course, as always, we'll talk about what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, why don't you meet the gang sitting around the table with me? Stephen Thompson, what do you do for NPR?
I am an editor and writer with the Emmy Award-winning NPR Music.
God, there we go.
Finally, an opportunity to give some recognition to NPR Music.
I enjoyed the several tweets that I got back when I tweeted this, because I made some joke, and they were like, oh, humble brag, humble brag.
Yeah, you think?
Nothing humble.
And I wrote back, like, any humility you detected was completely accidental.
Exactly. Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor at npr.org, and I buy yoga pants.
Excellent. I did call you out for that this week.
That's true.
That does set you apart from the rest.
Our esteemed producer, Mike Katzeff, has fit in two slow claps already.
Yep. And
just started the show. Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books on the NPR website.
I'm just doing that because people constantly confuse my voice and Trey's voice.
So that's
Chim Cheree.
Exactly. Hello, Governor.
Cockney Glenn Weldon. All right. Yeah.
Well, I just want to make sure that nobody thinks that I buy yoga pants.
That's true. That is a noble, noble way to look at it. So the first thing we're going to cover today is, as I mentioned, we made Trey and Glenn watch The X Factor. As you may know, The X Factor is Fox's new talent competition, talent in scare quotes, in which they are trying to fill the fall hole that they have as a result of the fact they don't air American Idol in the fall. This is the show that Simon Cowell is on now, and as I knew he would from the beginning, he has brought Paula Abdul over to the new show.
Yes, indeed.
So, Glenn, you loved The X Factor,
yes.
Am I right?
I agreed to do this under protest. I agreed to do this grudgingly, I think it's safe to say. And But it's been some time since we saw it. I've cycled through all five stages of grief. It took me a while to get off of anger. I think I emailed Stephen
never
a couple
got
times.
Off anger.
I am still stuck squarely in resentment.
If my inbox is any indication, I mean, I've gotten emails from Glenn in the last week that were like, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you.
You know what helped me get over it was Dave Holmes' recaps on
Vulture. Yes, they are excellent.
He helped me cycle through. So this is scream karaoke, right? Can we agree that this is just people yelling their feelings at me? It's all melisma. It's
over-emoting. So it's just like being at home.
Yes, that's right. They're filling the stage up with their soft, salty emotions. It's like the emotional equivalent of a Gallagher show. And I think it's gross.
It is.
And it's not for me.
Well, and it is so not yet to the point where it's even a competition. The culling has barely begun.
Oh, I know.
And the first couple of episodes, as always with American Idol and other shows of this type, are about trotting out the freaks for America to laugh at.
Right.
And I find that so tiresome.
4 hours. 4 hours.
4 hours.
If I wanted 4 hours of freaks, I'd hang around at work all day.
In Ohio.
Glenn, I'm assuming that, as with me, your viewing of The X Factor involved a certain amount of alcohol.
No, as a matter of fact.
Oh, my God, really?
No.
You made it through?
That's what you did wrong.
I think it must have. I had to watch it live because we were DVRing other things.
Heavens.
I could have fit 6 Breaking Bads into the time it took to watch these.
Oh, for sure.
Four hours.
Yes,
cranks.
The problem is that I have a very low threshold of sort of empathetic embarrassment. I get embarrassed for people who do not have.
Linda, as my best friend, has a very high threshold for empathetic embarrassment.
I get embarrassed for people who don't have the common sense or insight or self-knowledge to be embarrassed for themselves. And the algorithm of this show is we're meant to find the people who think they can sing and can't. We're meant to find that funny. I don't find it funny. I find it unpleasant. I find them deeply, deeply unpleasant people. I think it's just merely tasteless, especially when, you know, some people are just doing it as a joke. There's joke auditions.
There's definitely some.
Finally, there's some people who are evidently mentally ill in some way or not, and that's not fun.
No, I agree. And although this is a very close copy of American Idol in many ways, the judges are the same, the idea is the same, the kind of singing for the people who are good is the same, the kind of singing for the people who are bad are the same. But one thing that is massively different about it is American Idol does not trot the joke auditioners in front of a crowd.
Right. A gigantic crowd.
The large crowd
only sees the people who are good.
In the finals, yeah.
So if I find some shred of dignity in American Idol that is not in this show, which I think I kind of do.
Wow.
It's because, I know, you don't have to watch the person be booed by a room full of people.
Right.
Or a room full of people shifting uncomfortably. Now, the funny thing about that is, in the room full of people, there are one tiny drop worth of people. In the television audience, there are buckets and buckets of people. Yeah. So it's ridiculous.
And yet it seems more inhumane.
It seems more inhumane to humiliate them in front of people live, when in fact it's the same, right, you know, massive television audience either way. So that it's a drop in the bucket to care about whether they're being humiliated in front of people in a live theater. But I find it massively more off-putting.
Especially when the auditioners are 14 or 15.
Well, and the ones who really think they're good are the ones, the blonde kid who obviously he dances and sings, and some people clearly tell him he's good.
Right.
And his name was Johnny Rogers, I think.
Yeah.
And he clearly, Glenn makes a little noise. Yeah. Just
wait, there's some empathetic embarrassment.
There you go. I found your heart. that kid thought he was going to come and be good, and he's not... You know,
he's
outrageously, hilariously bad. It just was, you know, 20 degrees off in this way that makes you feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And to me, for that kid to be in a giant auditorium...
In an arena, in a sports arena.
...was worse than seeing him in an isolated audition room with just the judges.
And they only make it worse with the playback and the post-production.
Yeah. Right.
The intrusiveness of the production
and
the manipulativeness of the production.
And that is a huge difference. First of all, it's a very British twist. Mm-hmm. It's very much like The X Factor in England.
And Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah. What they're clearly going for, now, you know, and now Linda and I can sort of speak as people who actually tend to watch these stupid shows, is Susan Boyle moments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they managed to shoehorn about 8 Susan Boyle moments in which we learn about someone's malady, and then they come out and they sing their guts out. While we're speaking of Dave Holmes's recaps in Vulture, he refers to the woman who appears to have like mascara and tear squibs exploding in her face.
Is she the one who said that she didn't want to die with the music still trapped inside her?
And then she sang Natural Woman.
And then she sang Natural
Woman.
She did. But this is what I always say, though, about these shows. These shows are about intermittent reinforcement. That's the evil.
Right.
Is that you can watch them for 4 hours, and there will be one thing where you'll be like, I'm kind of glad I saw that.
Right?
She was so good. And
there's an 18-year-old in the second episode.
That is the one I thought
18-year-old
really
who sings like she has lived 3 lives already and gotten through them on Grace. She's got the money notes. She knows where they are, and she knows how to pick a song to show them off. And she was
amazing.
That to me was the one performance where I thought this person actually could be a professional singer. There were people who got practically held a parade in their honor, you know, as Coldplay's "Fix You" plays, you know, over them. But I mean, I tended to not actually think that most of those performances were particularly pure vocals.
Sure.
There was a lot of emotion, and you had the crowd sort of welling up behind them.
Right.
But the 18-year-old in the second episode, I agree, who she was singing your sort of Whitney Houston.
It was a Beyonce song.
Right, but I mean, she was singing sort of like Whitney Houston.
So as you guys know, I grew up in the 17th century in the Plymouth Colony. In the Plymouth Colony, where my parents, Goody and Proctor Weldon, would always say to me, "Don't make a fuss. Don't make a fuss about yourself. It's unseemly." So this show is about making a fuss. And when somebody shows a modicum of talent, first of all, the Pavlovian crowd just goes nuts.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't take much. And I mean, literally Pavlovian. They drool. The judges, because they know what they're doing, they want to make this dramatic, melodramatic. They just give these guys a tongue bath. There was people who just were shout singing who earned this. You are a unique talent.
You are
a special snowflake.
This was what actually got me to ultimately opt out of the last season of American Idol. Was I just felt like the praise was as delusional
as
some of the delusional singers.
I come and go with these sort of things. Like I watched one season of them, but I haven't followed it this last time around. There are, as Linda says, those moments of intermittent reinforcement when you're like, good heavens, that's real. That's real time.
Right.
But you have to get to that. You have to sit through the 7 minutes. I counted them, 7 minutes of the dramatization, and that's not counting the commercials, of the dramatization of the story. That it took to dramatize the story of Nick, the weepy 21-year-old piece of tween bait with the hair thing.
The one who looks like Vanilla Ice and nobody pointed it out.
Right.
Yeah. Who actually, complete with the fade and the eyebrow shaving thing. Yeah. It was Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that spoiled me for watching this kind of show and has made it much harder for me is watching The Sing-Off, which is the a cappella group show. When Ben Folds, who's one of the judges on that show, when he gives criticism, it's incredibly specific.
Mm. That was great. I really love your sound. Christy, I loved your presentation. It's just, it's so relaxed. You guys also have made some very jazzy stuff sound accessible, which is important, because the point of jazz, jazz chords, all those extensions, is not to freak people out, it's to get the message across. And the message is, in this song, it's about music, and it's about joy. You guys completely delivered it. Thank you. Oh, and Reggie, nice bass work. Excellent.
He will talk about chords. He will talk about tempo. He will talk about, oh, I really liked this, but I feel like in the choruses you were speeding up. You would never hear a piece of criticism like that of a singer on Idol. One of the other differences between this and Idol is that on American Idol, when you audition the first time, there is no band.
Right, there's nothing.
You are performing a cappella. And in fact, it does have a little more of a tendency to make you impressed by people who are actually good. Mm-hmm. Because people who can come into a room, it's much harder nerves-wise to sing without accompaniment, even accounting for the crowd not being there. Right. It's harder to sing if it's just your voice.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, it's harder to stay on pitch. So it actually reveals much more about your singing to me, the way they do it on Idol. Whereas in this, you're going with that super over-the-top production stuff from the very beginning.
Backing tracks.
So it's harder to tell.
I guess one advantage of doing it the way that they're doing it is you do reveal, you know, potentially, I think the idea is that you reveal who is going to wilt under the pressure of being
on a really big stage.
Right. Yeah. That you're able to sort of, I think they have a tendency to put a lot of people through who then turn out to be very, very boring when performing.
Right. And you have a little bit of an idea of how people relate to crowds.
And just to set up a few other differences here. I mean, the age range is different. On American Idol, it's like 16 to 29, I believe.
Something like that, yeah.
And maybe they lowered it to 15. And now on this show, it is 12 and up. Mm-hmm. And they also include a lot of mostly incredibly unfortunate singing groups. Mm-hmm. So you have groups that unironically come out and proclaim themselves boy bands. Mm-hmm. It's vocal groups. You don't see bands.
Right. And there are some commonalities. I was pleased, for Thompson's sake, that there were at least two, you know, good-sized slices of Hunga Dunga Dang.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Thompson, would you explain?
The search for the next Scott Stapp.
there's the one big beardy guy with the long hair whose entire story arc is going to be about flirting with Nicole in the way that
Casey Hunga Dunga Dang is Stephen's word for these kind of Creed type growly.
Hunga Dunga Dang.
Got it now. We got it.
I really got it now.
No, hold on.
We got it, sweetie.
but I also think among the differences, it seems to me that in many cases they seem to be trying to unearth maybe a different kind of pop star. I think they're more inclined to try to find the next Pussycat Dolls. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I have still been focused myself on trying to travel back in time and stop the last Pussycat Dolls.
Speaking of the judges, the equivalent to Little Pitchy Dog is I Got Goosebumps.
Yeah.
L.A. Reid saying, I got goosebumps. I don't have goosebumps. Here's the condition of my skin right now.
and I'm sorry, if he doesn't stop conducting the singers that he likes, like closing his eyes and tilting his head back and waving his hands in their general direction.
The only thing I liked about the show is that dude's chair dancing, very stern-faced, you know, like not moving anything except occasionally his head. I could relate to that. Paula Abdul. I've never watched Idol. I've been hearing about Paula Abdul for years. Mm-hmm. And finally, I sit down and watch this stupid show with Paula Abdul, and I get, in Dave Holmes' words, well, let's invoke him one last time, disappointingly lucid.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's very true. She was much less crazy.
I don't see
crazy.
What the big deal is.
Her verticality disappoints me.
I will point out that at the end of the second episode, I guess it was, they were teasing some Paula crazy. So
I think it's safe to say that no matter what else we can conclude, that this is still a genre that Stephen and I are likely to occasionally check in on.
Oh, yeah.
Tran Glenn.
I'm out.
Not so much.
Seacrest.
I was just going to say that we have not talked about something very important, which is our feelings about Welshie McRarebit.
Oh, yes.
But British Seacrest,
very
excited. Like
he is Welsh.
Stephen, trust me.
British,
that is
it's all UK.
No. That is a Welsh accent.
You're going to get letters.
Yes, and that.
He is kind of like... He's like a charmingly accented vacuum.
He does kind of add to a certain slight desperation that really comes through particularly in the beginning of the show. Is there's a lot of like Gabbo, Gabbo, Gabbo about the first few minutes of that show.
If he said it once, he said it five times. He says, "And the crowds have gathered here in their thousands." And I'm like, I think that's a Scottish accent.
He might as well just talk. The crowd has gathered in their thousands.
We are not close on the accent. Groundskeeper
Willie.
But who says in their thousands?
Well.
No, seriously. I do want to say one more thing about The X Factor, which for me, my level of interest in The X Factor going forward is the extent to which it becomes an actual influence on popular culture. I feel like if the show takes off in such a way that people are really, you have people who are talking crazily about who they support and who they hate, and it becomes an actual pop cultural touchstone, I will feel obligated to watch it and will find myself engaging with it.
So we're all hoping that won't happen.
I'm really hoping that doesn't happen because I don't want to watch it.
Fair enough. I think that's extremely fair. Speaking of extremely fair, this is the part of the show where sometimes I like to bring y'all a little game.
Oh, yes.
A little game. Yeah. It's a little game now. As you may know, we have not talked about this yet, but I did miss last week's show because while walking in DuPont Circle, which you would think would be a fairly low-risk activity, I managed to fall and mess up my ankle. So I appreciate Tanya filling in last week.
Yep.
And I appreciate how you all soldiered on without me.
I think flailed.
Flailed miserably without you.
Since I am still nursing my sore ankle, I have decided to present to you a quiz on injuries in pop culture.
Good then.
Specifically, this quiz is called Head, Shoulder, Knee, or Toe, Knee, or Toe. the answer in all cases is either head, shoulder, knee, or toe.
Okay.
Some of you will not be familiar with some of these. Some of them, maybe none of you will, but you'll have to guess anyway.
All right.
So I'm going to throw the first one to Glenn Weldon. In the final episode of the first season of Friday Night Lights, you are being quizzed. Mm-hmm. Smash Williams suffers an injury to what body part?
It would be knee.
Shoulder. Damn. Dislocated shoulder. Remember, he has them pop it back in so he can finish the...
Ow.
All right. Trey Graham, are you Friends guy?
I was a little bit.
Okay. The second time Monica and Chandler ever met at her parents' house, a mishap during a seduction attempt resulted in an injury to his...
Toe.
Toe! That is correct. Very good, Trey Graham. Stephen Thompson. Yes. In the climactic fight of The Karate Kid, Daniel-san is battling back from an injury to what?
Oh, my God. I love that movie. He is... I believe it is...
Why is he doing the crane kick?
Right.
Hey.
See, now that is... But that.
Well, he made it clear he didn't know.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've seen The Karate Kid. I love The Karate Kid. It's knee, isn't it?
It is knee. Very good. I freely admit. You're not being scored.
Well, I did not know either of the first two.
Fair enough.
But we are exposing ourselves to, you know, shame.
Yes.
In front of literally tens of listeners.
That is what I do on this show every single week. Yep.
Glenn Weldon on Grey's Anatomy, Dr. McDreamy.
I'm out.
Yeah, no idea.
Dr. McDreamy would be most likely to operate on what body part?
Head.
Head.
That was my guess.
He is a brain surgeon. Very, very good.
Of course he is, because all the brain surgeons look like that.
The sexiest of surgeries.
Absolutely. Trey Graham. In Speed, Jeff Daniels' character instructs Keanu Reeves to shoot the hostage, resulting in his getting shot closest to where?
Shoulder.
Knee!
No.
Shoot the hostage. Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
On Mythbusters.
All right.
And an attempt to find out how long a person can cling to the side of a building resulted in a rare serious injury to Tori Belleci's what
Really? I did not know that.
Any guesses hanging from
the I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess shoulder.
It is knee.
Really?
It is a grisly injury.
Oh.
Watch out for that one.
When I they like do Tori Velacci.
When they do the
I like all those people.
He actually went in an ambulance and everything.
Oh.
Just like me at a DuPont Circle.
But he was hanging off a building and you actually tripped on a banana peel while trying to remove your elbow from your ear.
That's right. That's exactly right. All right, Glenn Weldon.
We're standing at one all, by the way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. Glenn Weldon, this is going to be another guess for you, uh-huh. I have a feeling. In an episode of The Big Bang Theory, Penny fell in the shower and injured what, requiring that she be taken to the hospital?
It's a comedy. The funniest one of those four? Toe.
It is, and yet it was her shoulder. Trey Graham. Claire Huxtable.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Just thinking about Claire
wound up in a competition with her husband to look smooth after suffering an injury to what?
I'm going to say knee.
It was her toe.
Her toe.
I knew that one.
Ooh. It was her toe.
Why? Why do you give me the hard questions?
And finally...
You ask me about the injuries in Maria Stuarda, I can help you out.
And finally, Stephen Thompson.
Yes.
Michael Scott's love of bacon led him to accidentally sustain an injury closest... To
his toe.
His toe.
I love that episode.
Foot.
God, I love that episode.
In the George Foreman
when he falls down in the bathroom and is summoning Ryan, it is just one of my favorites.
Stepped on the George Foreman grill. Well, there is not a whole lot to be said about the results of this quiz because some of you got things that you knew. And some of you didn't. And Stephen got one free one. So, but I just wanted to make sure that we brought injuries to everyone's attention.
Good we game. Talked more good about game. Linda's
that
injury.
That we talked about my... Well, I really just wanted to know whether I could build an entire quiz around head, shoulder, knee, and foot. And I did.
The alternate title for that segment was, My Foot Hurts!
That's true. That's absolutely true. All right. Next on our agenda, we have a segment that we are calling... I said good day, sir.
And, I believe it is called I Said Good Day.
I said good day. Thank you, Stephen Thompson.
Wow.
And I will explain when I get around to mine how we got on this topic. Mm. The basic idea here is something that you have tried, mm-hmm. that you may once have been open to, but that you have realized over time it is not for you. And you have bid it adieu, saying...
Our business is concluded.
Our business is concluded. I said good day. Glenn Weldon. What have you said good day to?
Well, singing competitions for one.
just lately.
Just lately. That's the newest one. Horror generally, especially slasher films, because they're about making you jump. I don't care for jumping.
Yeah.
Oh. I think it's cheap. You know, it's like, oh, well done. You triggered an autonomic response. Yeah. Good for you.
It's like the tingler.
You're an auteur.
Uh-huh.
Yes. A pointed stick could do the same thing. but what I decided on was, I was going to say cop and lawyer shows, but it's not that in general. There's a special breed of cop and lawyer show.
Excellent.
That trades on sanctimony, that trades on moral outrage. If the driving thing about the show is procedure, tell me a story, what happens next. If it's classic Law and Order, for example, I will
right.
get sucked in
right.
because it's about narrative. It's about the pull of narrative. It's hard to not get swept up in that. But there are more and more cop and lawyer shows, and I'm thinking here of CSI and SVU in particular, that believe it's important for me to know how the cops and lawyers feel about the perp
yes.
in question.
Yes.
I think it's because the writers and producers are laboring under the mistaken impression that it's cathartic somehow for the audience to watch somebody seethe at a murderer. Or
I don't like predators either.
Well, see, that's exactly the point.
That cop is so right about that murderer.
We don't need an audience's proxy. I resent the fact they don't trust me to feel the requisite amount of contempt for somebody who's contemptible.
it's true.
And it's just, it's so melodramatic. And if I can get a little grad school up in here... It's a normative, moralistic impulse.
Okay, how does the hoi polloi interact with that?
I can remember one early CSI that was about kids going to a rave in the desert. A good 6 years after rave culture was dead.
I believe
dead,
I know exactly where you're
dead.
Going with this.
Yes.
Okay.
And the last, you know, Dr. Seuss hat had been put in mothballs already. And it's just all about, like, these kids and this, how dare they, and it's just, it was
I believe
so
that has the line,
duddy.
It's like William Peterson delivering the line, like, there's one thing I can't stand, it's people who deal death to kids.
See, right there.
Oh, my
right
God.
There. I think it's that episode.
Now, that has a long tradition, right? It goes back to Dragnet. I mean, Jack Webb was stoic, but he hated hippies, and that
don't
came
we
through.
All?
That, well, he had a point. I'm not saying he didn't have a point. But I just, these shows don't trust the audience and they feel pushy. And so that's why I've just said good day.
That is a very, very fair conclusion, I think, for you. Trey Graham, what have you said good day to lately?
Harpists.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean, seriously.
Somewhere Joanna Newsom is shaking her fist angrily.
I mean them no offense. And I will admit that when they are deployed properly as part of a large ensemble.
Or in heaven.
You know, where they're doing the swoopy thing at the right moment in a big romantic piece as it goes soaring over the top. Then I understand why the harp exists. But I have to say, and I know that I am in some ways going to be letting down the gaze, that I do not ever need to go to an Easter brunch while the sun is still up and find that I am to be serenaded delicately by a lady in a ball gown up in the balcony.
Yeah.
Do they play the harp at gay Easter brunch?
It depends. It depends on the gay Easter brunch.
I was going to say I expected more like dancing.
I think you may be picking the wrong harpists.
Yeah, may be the problem.
If you want to try a good harpist, look for the Tiny Desk concert with a Colombian harpist named Edmar Castaneda.
I believe I was there.
Who was pretty damn good. Yeah, I missed Yolanda Condonassis. We have had two harpists at the Tiny Desk.
And Stephen can name both of them off the top of his head.
It is possible that I will reassess if once I go watch the videos again. But for now, I know that harpists are plucky.
Oh, God.
Wow.
I said good day, sir.
I was going to say, can I pick that joke?
But I will have no truck with them.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
No glissandos for you. I just wanted to get the one word I know.
I think you got to be brave. You got to be brave and anti-brunch in some small, tiny way. Yeah. Stephen Thompson?
I do think horror movies is one that I've certainly tried a number of times, and it just ultimately winds up not being for me. It's not that there aren't great horror films. It's just that I'm a puss. Well, it's not even necessarily like, oh, I'm going to have nightmares. Mm-hmm. It's just I don't want to watch people getting murdered.
Yes.
I live near,
as William Peterson taught us, that's bad.
Right. Yeah.
Now, we're really talking about slasher films more than horror films, right?
Right. Gore. Right. Gore in general. Right. And sort of superfluous gore in movies that are not about superfluous gore tend to put me off a bit. I think it's probably more about me than the genre itself. But I tend to find sort of particularly visceral violence in all senses of the word. Sex in the City, not my thing.
Its progeny, undoubtedly.
Certainly has its place. Real Housewives of Anywhere, we've discussed that on this show. It just watching people air their grievances with no stakes, not my thing. I said good day. And finally, celebrity impersonators. Hmm. The whole field of celebrity impersonations, and particularly I will call out, I've heard nothing but nice things about the guy. He's from Wisconsin, God bless him. But on the Fox pregame show for the NFL is a man named Frank Caliendo.
Yes, yes.
It seems like a really nice guy. I can't stand the Frank Caliendo segments, and I mute the TV or switch the channel
time. And some of his impressions are good, but other ones I don't even think sound anything like the person, and I wind up sitting there thinking, I could do a better...
Some of his impersonations are fairly spot on in terms of mannerisms.
Right, some of them are.
But for me, the issue, and if somebody wants to recommend a really good celebrity impersonator who has jokes, then I would be, you know, at least notionally open to trying it out. The problem is, and Saturday Night Live has had this problem, an imitation of a celebrity has to have really
jokes.
Sharp
decent material. Have you heard Kevin Spacey's?
He does
Jimmy
funny.
Stewart. He does Katherine Hepburn. He does a president or two. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
If he's got jokes, I'll check it out. Impersonators.
Well,
it can be
jokes, or for me, it can be bringing out a quality that you haven't necessarily noticed before in somebody's affect. That can be a valid use of an impersonation.
Well, I mean, Tina Fey as Sarah Palin. Sure. Brings out, you know, had sort of a cathartic quality for people who...
But at the same time, to me, that's a party trick, and I need to see it, like, once, and then I don't need to keep seeing it. Like, I don't need to see the same guy do as Nicholson every...
I don't know. I could see Bill... Ever. I could see Bill Hader's Vincent Price for the rest of my life.
But that's done with material. That's done with jokes. True. And the other thing that's interesting is that although now Saturday Night Live really prides itself on the exactitude of the impression, it used to be that sometimes they would go a completely completely different, like when Chevy Chase was Gerald Ford.
Right.
That had nothing to do with impersonating Gerald Ford in any way other than falling. And they
just
completely threw it out
him.
The window. They didn't make him up to look like Gerald Ford. Right. They didn't care at all. He was Gerald Ford because they said he was.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they just went from there, and he was the one who played Gerald Ford, but very much Gerald Ford, the character, not necessarily Gerald Ford, the exact voice replica.
It's frustrating for me because I like football, and I like yelling.
You do. Yeah. you like yelling. Well, now that we have come around to me, I will explain how we got on this topic in the first place, which is that we had a discussion about the possibility that we would see and discuss Contagion. Mm. I never got that far because I said, I don't want to see it. And the reason I didn't want to see it, the fellas here occasionally give me grief about the fact that I am a slight hypochondriac.
Okay, I want to challenge two things you just said. One is clearly, obviously, the word slight, and the other one is the word occasionally.
I do not like reading about diseases or reading news stories about seemingly innocuous symptoms that turn out to be some kind of horrible, right? Some kind
of horrible
disaster.
So like the guy with the neti pot whose brain rotted away?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Things like that. Shh. So you're doing it right now. So as soon as I saw the stuff about Contagion, I was sort of saying, like, I don't want to see this because it's going to completely freak me out. And then people would say, oh, no, it's not sensationalistic. It's an incredibly realistic story of how we would all get sick and die. And I was like, right, that's the thing. I really don't need to think about it very much. For me, anything like that, I've watched some shows like House and Grey's Anatomy and stuff like that, but I have to be very judicious about stuff like that, because if I catch the wrong one, it will stick in my head, and once it gets in there, it just does not come back out again. It's a one-way thing. It's severe tire damage, cannot back up. You know, you may recall when we saw Planet of the Apes that one of the things about Planet of the Apes that I thought was so weird was that at the end, they just have this, like, extinction whole thing, or at least spread of disease, that is done in this graphic over the credits. And it bothered me because it felt so tacked on, and it felt like it should have been a bigger part of the story if they were going to say that that was what happened. But in all honesty, it was probably better for me because at least I didn't have these visions of, like, and then they shook hands and then everyone died. Which is bad enough.
Like, anyone who rides the train to work is doomed.
I was going to say, let me tell you, I can tell you how the humans are going to go extinct. I have seen Contagion.
No, don't tell me. Spoiler alert. It's like every now and then there'll be something on House where it'll be like somebody will be, you know.
Oh, the chafing of the bra strap.
Well, right. Or it'll be like, my ear itches. My ear really itches. And then all of a sudden it's like, and that turns out to be a brain tumor. Like, I can't watch that stuff. It's bad.
Felled by ear cancer.
It's bad for me. And if you've ever read about, first year medical students tend to be like this. They spend so much time reading about diseases that they all diagnose themselves with all
right.
sorts of
yeah.
things. I am like that without the knowledge.
Good.
So it's all the exposure. That's exactly what happens to me. So my I said good day is I do not hang with epidemic
enthusiasts.
Disaster movies. I do not like it. It does not make me happy. I say good day and keep your mucus to yourself.
Yep.
Speaking of everyone being wiped off the face of the earth, that brings us to what is making us happy this week. So, Glenn Weldon, what other than contagious disease is making you happy this week?
Well, let the record show that I am deeply conflicted about this particular what's making me happy. On the one hand, it is very, very funny. On the other hand, it is a series of ads. It's viral marketing. It is targeted squarely to my demographic, the comedy nerd demographic, in a way that is kind of infuriating that I resent hugely. And yet,
it works.
Let's visit point A. It's very, very funny. I just hate being so nakedly marketed to, especially with a series of online ads. But at last count, there are 46 of these ads, and I have watched them all, and some of them many times. So, just to make sure I can tolerate making this recommendation, I am not going to name the product that they are advertising. Take that, social marketing gurus.
You got to tell me what they are.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is just go to YouTube, type in Doug the Puppet. The actors in this particular ad are John Ross Bowie, B-O-W-I-E. W-I-E, who also, by the way, wrote that Heather's book that I mentioned a couple weeks back. And somebody might have mentioned on this podcast once or twice 17 million times, Paul F. Tompkins.
Yes.
I'm going to leave it to discover it on your own, but just a heads up, you want to really look for the one with a lint roller because it is really freaking funny. A mysterious product.
Mysterious product. Ads starring Paul F. Tompkins. Very good. Doug the Puppet ads for mystery product. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Well, what's making me happy this very afternoon as we tape is that John Hodgman has been live-tweeting ATC,
yes, all things considered.
Yes, he has.
And has basically been mocking public radio and all it stands for, as well as appearing to enjoy it. So that's right in my sweet spot, so I'm down with that. Also, Yoga Pants, which I bought. And
everybody listening at home should go acquire Yoga Pants.
Oh, actually, I'm only talking about it because I actually got myself back to the studio after a year of being really late. And going home
by having the right pants.
By having the right pants.
Can't exercise without the
motivation.
Right pants.
You may recall that last week I picked the show Pan Am for our fantasy TV football league or whatever we're calling it. And so I watched that and I was delighted to discover that the lady in the girdle snapping scene, that's Vianne Cox. She's a terrific stage actress and she's actually about to come down to DC and do a run of Much Ado About Nothing, playing Beatrice, the heroine. And she's possibly a
more sophisticated role possibly, than the girdle snapper on Pan Am.
Right, but I'm just really glad she's getting a little work there. You know, I love finding strong actors in little parts like that, and I hope she gets a recurring role.
Absolutely.
Most of what is making me happy this week is a blog post at NPR's classical music blog, which is called Deceptive Cadence. It's about a new album from the countertenor Bejun Mehta, and it has a lovely recording on it. You can listen to the whole song, a Rafe Vaughan Williams song that I didn't know, which is called Silent Noon. And because on this sort of gray, chilly week, listening to that song put me in mind of another song, this one by Samuel Barber, called Sure on This Shining Night. Set to a poem by James Agee, who I've mentioned before on this podcast, and it's a kind of ecstatic lyric.
Ecstatic? I'm sorry. I'm
sorry. No. Ecstatic in the sense of visionary trance-like. The lyric itself, the words, are trance-like, moody and meditative on the world around the speaker. But there's also a profound romantic melancholy to this song that just moves me tremendously.
You picked up the romantic melancholy.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
It's called Sure on This Shining Night, and it's by Samuel Barber. And don't get the one that's by the other guy. Believe it or not, there's a choral setting of something, probably, I assume, the same text by somebody who's not Samuel Barber. You want the Samuel Barber. And it's one of my favorite things. I hadn't listened to it in a long time, and so this blog post reminded me of it, and it made me happy.
Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
I was going to pick that same piece of music, but instead I will start by saying that the Packers are 3-0.
Got a little something for everyone.
Two things Glenn doesn't care about.
From like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Actually, we got from yoga pants to the Packers in like a minute.
Victory.
I'm certainly delighted to report that the Packers are 3-0. Also delighted to report that two of the traditionally most bottom-feeding, pathetic jokes of NFL franchise NFL franchises in recent history. Sorry, Mike, who is a Chiefs fan.
He said two of.
but the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions are also 3-0, and I have friends who are hardcore fans of both teams, and I'm just delighted for those people until they play the Packers, at which point I will wish them hot death. If you had told me at the beginning of the season that the Buffalo Bills, the Detroit Lions, and the Green Bay Packers would all have the same record, I would have assumed that Aaron Rodgers and Clay Matthews had died in a murder-suicide pact. Anyway, delighted about that. Obviously, the Emmy is wonderful. Wanted to throw out a recommendation, speaking of comedy nerds, that there is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful new comedy record by one of my very, very favorite comedians, Patton Oswalt. Just to do a quick callback to the I Said Good Day, things that I really, really never respond to is comedians talking about their experiences taking drugs. Mm-hmm. Just for whatever reason, that's, I think, among other things, it is an inherently incredibly personal experience that is unique to you and doesn't really necessarily always translate to hilarious comedy. I thought his last record was really kind of tarnished by some lengthy riffs about that. This is just just start to finish, incredibly funny. It's called Finest Hour. It's just 75 minutes of just, you know, I've been listening to it in my car when the kids are not in the car with me.
Right.
Because it is not, it's not family friendly.
Yeah.
But Patton Oswalt, Finest Hour, just a wonderful, wonderful, just a hilarious comedy. I'm sure it's the best comedy record of the year.
Fantastic. Well, as for me, I was naturally inclined to say Vicodin.
Okay, well, yes.
Because it was a great help. Let's
quite literally
say,
making you happy.
It made me very happy. Or EMTs. Because I will say, the two fellas who picked me up off the sidewalk in DuPont Circle.
In a literal sense.
In a literal sense. Very good. Very enjoyable. Nice guys. Made it super easy. Made me not self-conscious. When we got to the hospital, you know, they very nicely took me into the hospital. And Glenn was there. He was with me.
Hey, what hospital? Should we shout out?
Georgetown Hospital.
All right.
People at Georgetown Hospital were very kind to me.
Throwing a little product placement.
Absolutely. They were very good.
One of the EMTs was kind of hot.
Yes.
I was going to ask, because the one time I got taken to the hospital, yeah, they were hot.
One of them for sure was in particular. But really, they were both extremely good guys, and I got very good care and appreciated them very much. And, of course, the fact that Glenn stayed with me at the hospital and wheeled me around in both a hospital bed and a wheelchair, in addition to, you know, getting to enjoy the full extent of my initial stages of pain management.
So here's to first responders and loyal friends.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, in fact, Glenn gave me the best advice I got all day, which was that I had screwed up massively by when they asked me how bad the pain was on a scale of 1 to 10. I think I said like 3 or 4.
You said 3.
Never say 3.
Glenn was like, they're never going to see you. So I did the next time they asked. I was like, oh, I think it's a little worse. I think it's like a 5 now. So so I just had wanted to leave lots of space because, you know, being who I am, I always assume the pain's going to get a lot worse. once the maggots come or so I wanted to make sure I had lots of eggs.
Maggots?
Thorned maggots.
Once the ankle sprain goes septic.
Exactly. Yeah,
you're expecting some gangrene. Touch of gangrene.
Exactly. So, the actual pop culture item that I want to mention this week is a piece that Mindy Kaling, who is on The Office, wrote for The New Yorker. And it is about something very dear to my heart, which is images of women in film. And there's nothing in it that is super, super new. It is a collection of stereotypes that has been noted before. She's very specific about the fact that one of her types is very similar to the Manic Pixie Dream Girl we've talked about a lot. But the way that she says it was very refreshing, and I enjoyed a lot. So I'm going to read just one little piece of this from her description of the woman she calls the klutz. The 100% perfect-looking female is perfect in every way except that she constantly bonks her head on things. Mm. She trips and falls and spills soup on her affable date, Josh Lucas. Is that his name? I know it's two first names. Josh George, Brad Mike, Fred Tom. Yes, it's Fred Tom. The klutz clangs into stop signs while riding her bike and knocks over giant displays of fine china in department stores. Despite being 5'9" and weighing 110 pounds, she is basically like a drunk buffalo who has never been part of human society. But Fred Tom loves her anyway. And it goes on like that. And like I said, this is an exercise that has been gone through before, but it is done with particular flair. And I think her outlook as a young, good woman writer who wants to write romantic comedies and has trouble finding a way to write what she wants to write without being shoehorned into these particular types. It's very useful. And again, Mindy Kaling in The New Yorker, it is online and we'll link to it. And I strongly recommend it. It's a very, very good piece. So that brings us to the end of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks, guys. It's good to be with you again.
How did we ever get here?
So is this the first time in a while that all the
it's
actual...
It's been a while, for sure. Well, you know, you had your appliance problem, and I had my ankle. But you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. That's STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. Trey with an E and Graham, just like the delicious cracker often used in pie crusts. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. You are listening to it right now. So thanks again to all of you guys for being here. It was great to see you.
Miss it. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for being here. Come find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. We'll chat with you there, and we'll see you back here next week.